Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, December 5th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with me. And with me again today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Nice to be here as well. Good morning.
I'm so glad you're here with us. And we have some great stuff to talk about today. So first off, Andrew, I want to start with you. And you discovered this really interesting article about Apple and its technology transitions through the ages.
Yeah, it's a very interesting article. It's long, but it's worth it because it tells you some parts of Apple history. So this guy, I'm not actually sure who wrote it, but he wrote about tech transitions that Apple has gone through throughout the years. He categorizes them into two groups. So there are CPU transitions and then API transitions. And it all starts back in 1994 when Apple switched the Mac from their Motorola 68K CPU over to PowerPC. And he writes that Apple worked with Motorola and IBM with this, and this was known as the AIM Alliance. So they all worked together and created the first PowerPC CPU.
The guy that wrote it, by the way, his name is Martin Pilkington. I've seen him on Twitter forever. He goes by Pilky. So he may be somebody that rings a bell for one of our listeners out there. He talks about Apple stuff once in a while. So, yeah, it's a good dude. And this is an interesting timeline.
So just going down the list. So it goes from 68K to PowerPC, and then PowerPC to Intel 2006, and then finally from Intel to ARM. And then after that, it's just some of the API transitions they went to, like going from the classic environment over to Mac OS X.
Yes, that was a long process. I don't think it was as long as it actually felt like, but it felt like it took a really long time.
Yeah, so it says this is the one that was able to virtualize Mac OS 9.
This was so you could run your Mac OS 9 stuff on Mac OS 10. So if you were running Mac OS 10, because a lot of things hadn't been prepared for that, even though there'd been a public beta of OS 10 for like a year or two, maybe. I don't know, John, do you remember?
No, I don't.
Like, it was public and it was out there for a long time. And I remember it because it was the first time I remember Apple taking customer feedback from anybody, because they put out OS 10 and there was no Apple menu. And I can't even imagine the amount of feedback they got about there not being an Apple menu anymore. Like, you're making everything else new. Give me my Apple menu. And so I remember there being an event where Steve Jobs was on stage and said, in the latest version of the beta for Mac OS X, you'll notice there's an Apple menu. And people cheered. So that's one of the things that sticks out to me about that one. It was a hard, it felt like a hard bridge to cross.
I remember demoing the public beta of Mac OS X at a show, and a curious elder gentleman came by, and I was talking to him about it, and I said, yeah, Mac OS is now Unix. And he said, nonsense.
Nonsense?
So I opened up a terminal window, and I can still feel the pain in my ribs where he pushed me aside and started typing on the terminal window. So, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's Unix. It's real Unix.
Yeah. Well, and there, you know, like, a lot of Unix fans were like, oh, you can't put a GUI on that, it'll never work. And a lot of Mac OS people were like, you can't power that with Unix, it'll never work. So I remember it being a very interesting transition at the time. I mean, nobody thinks about it now, but I remember at the time it was really hard.
It was. Jordan Hubbard tells the story on background mode about how difficult it was. It took years.
Interesting. Another plug for background mode.
The original Panther came out, Cheetah and Panther, things weren't nailed down. Things weren't the way we think of them today is really nailed.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. And then this is a current article, partly, Andrew, because one of the things that gets talked about is Bitpocalypse the 32-bit, 64-bit situation, which just happened.
Yeah, he says that is kind of what prompted him to write all this, was going from 32-bit to 64-bit. And now this is a transition that I've been around for, starting back with the iPhone, I think it was. Well, he does say that Apple's first 64-bit Mac was the Power Mac G5, but then they moved over to the iPhone. So I think the iPhone 5 was the first 64-bit iPhone. Yeah. And there was this quote from inside someone inside Qualcomm. Maybe we were talking about this the other day. You know, on the outside, they say, oh, yeah, this is no big deal. But on the inside, some quote was like, this was a punch to the gut. Like, this took us all by surprise when Apple did this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of that happens. and, you know, I know, John, you had some feelings about these transitions. I mean, and before we get there, though, these are the like fundamental, like these are things that changed. It was a fundamental shift. This isn't counting some of the slightly less fundamental shifts, like no longer having a floppy drive, and then eventually no longer having any kind of optical drive, and then it's not ADB anymore. We're going to go with USB for things now. USB-A.
Oh, no headphone
and then,
jack.
And well, that's only a mobile thing. I was just talking about Apple stuff, Mac stuff. You know,
hardware is pretty transparent. You just switch the plug, and things hopefully work.
Yeah. So
SCSI drive, FireWire drive, USB drive, FireWire, ADB. You just plug it in. You know.
Yeah, and I remember going through some of those transitions. I had an iMac that didn't have a floppy drive. My computer now doesn't have an optical drive in it. And I remember those transitions as well. And, you know, people do sometimes, it's funny to me now to hear people talk about Apple not innovating, because I remember people being really mad about those things and saying Apple needs to stop innovating, you know, because I invested all this money in ADB devices, or I have all these SCSI things that don't work on my computer anymore. And, Apple needs to slow down. Apple's relentless march forward is, you know, causing me an inconvenience, and I'm going to be really upset about it. And there just wasn't as much platform for that stuff as there is today. So I think that piece of it is sort of interesting when you think about, like, there's a big list of these that are great big changes, and that doesn't even count some of the stuff that people are going through now, like transitioning to USB-C, or what do I do when my computer doesn't have a MagSafe connector anymore, and things like that.
There are natural changes that have to occur. There were changes that had to occur because of the operating systems. We had to get to a certain point where we could implement security issues, deal with security issues, and transition from 32 to 64-bit, you know, just had to come. And in the early days, there was directory services that were outdated and had to be fixed. And fundamental architecture issues that were easy to implement in the early days of macOS, when we weren't overburdened and it wasn't very complex and there weren't a lot of interactions. But now we have iPhones connected to our Macs in some oblique way. We have a very sophisticated, complex, modern operating system. And nowadays, when Apple makes a major change to macOS, It's a burden. It can be a burden to a lot of people because of the sophistication and scope system. So in the early days, we kind of skated through them, and we just kind of went with it. You know, fat binaries, and we had the classic environment for running our old apps.
Fat binaries.
You know, and so on. But nowadays, because the operating system is so big and so complex, a major architectural change places a big burden on the user, and Apple has to figure out ways to use, I'm going to write about this soon, it's artificial intelligence techniques, machine learning, pre-flight, mm-hmm. you know, some sort of assistant to manage the process, because Apple tends to think that everybody has the time to, you know, assume the burden of dealing with their major architectural changes, and sometimes that's not true.
Right.
That's why there's some people running Lion these days.
Yeah. Well, some of those people are just stubborn. But I think, you know, part of that is, while I think, and I don't think I'm going to get any disagreement from the two of you on this, I think that lately, because it's so big and so complex, I think the transitions have not been as smooth as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I don't know how much of that has to do with economies of scale. Like, we're talking about a lot more users now than we were when it was transitioning people off of Classic. We're talking about way more people with way different configurations who do way different things with their hardware. You know, it's orders of magnitude more people, I would venture, than people who were trying to, you know, prop up the Classic layer for just one more version of the operating system, just so they could make sure that it was still going to do whatever it was that Classic app needed to do. And I think another piece of this is that it's also possible that, you know, computers aren't new. Lots of people out in the world now grew up with some sort of computer interaction in their life, in their home. And I think Apple may also be relying on people to do a little bit more. And you know, to me, as an informed person who tends to be an edge case, who has to do a lot of the work anyway, and then field phone calls from other people about that work. you know, my computer wants me to update. What do I do? Not yet. Having those conversations, like, I still feel like it's a much easier process now than it used to be. Because it used to be far more dangerous to upgrade your operating system in place than it was to back everything up to another hard drive, reset everything to zero, put the new operating system on, and then move everything back. Now you can do it in place from the App Store, which is also another fundamental change that didn't make this list. You go to the App Store and you go, yeah, hit me with some Catalina, and you go have lunch and you come back and your computer's upgraded. I mean, in theory, for most people, yeah, that's how system upgrades work. For most people, for most operating systems, that's how it's been. You know, you come home, you know, like, I've talked to people and been like, why does your computer look funny? Oh, it said to update, and I clicked update and it updated, and now it looks different. Okay. So I think there's a whole lot more moving parts, and there's a lot more that can go wrong, but there's also a lot more people using it. So I feel like
and a lot more refinement in the upgrade process. In the old days, Apple had, I remember, I don't know when it was, but there was a classic case of a bad Perl script maybe 10 or 15 years ago where people's data got wiped out.
Yeah.
When was that? I forget. But Apple has refined and improved the upgrade process now where it's almost foolproof.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did have like a big leap this time with Catalina and the 64-bit apocalypse and that sort of stuff. And, you know, if you ask Dr. Mac, he'll still tell you, don't install it. You know, we've seen people having some trouble. This was a little rougher transition for most people, it seems like. But I think overall, like, given the amount of stuff that happens between operating systems now, I feel like that process is at least as good, if not better, than it was back in the day. We just weren't juggling as many things then.
And I think a good example of that is when Apple created their new APFS file system, because this isn't just a system update. This is like changes to the underlying system going from HFS to APFS, and it works on both Mac and iPhone, and it was just a seamless transition as part of an update.
Yeah.
Everything in place.
Yeah, this is the way that your computer talks to the actual device where your data is stored, the actual hardware.
Yeah, but there's some wrinkles in that process. I may be mistaken on this, but I seem to recall that in Mojave, your carbon copy cloner drive could still be HFS, but in Catalina, it cannot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's true.
So there are some subtexts here.
But was it Mojave or was it 13 where we went to APFS?
High Sierra.
It was High Sierra.
13.
Yeah, that's 13. Yeah. I couldn't remember what it was called. Yeah, High Sierra is when we got a brand new file system. And if you ask a lot of people when the file system changed, they may not even know the file system changed. Yeah. And the fact that that went unnoticed by a lot of people is a very good point, Andrew, because lots of people have no idea that that even happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
until they start playing around with disk utility.
Well, and a lot for a lot of people, it was transparent
changes.
John, yeah. Play that back. Most people don't play around with disk utility.
Well, I mean, if they're, you know, buy a new SSD external drive and they want to format it and they want to back some stuff up.
Oh, sure.
By playing around with that, I don't mean undirected. Excuse me.
I think you mean more like, I need to reformat a flash drive, or I got a new drive and I'm going to plug it in and I want it to be my time machine.
The word I was looking. Yeah. I didn't mean indiscriminate messing around undirected. I meant creative play.
Because, see, I do that. Like, I will go into disk utility and poke at stuff just to see what's different because I don't use it very much. So
yeah.
I like to go take a look and make sure I can still do whatever it is that I used to do. Sometimes I can't. It makes me mad.
Idea.
You hear about it here.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, and it's really only that one. Like, I don't go and open all the rest of my apps. Like, it's been 2 months and I need to take a look. Nothing like that. But disk utility is one that when I need it, I need to know what I'm doing, and I need to not be learning a new app at the same time I'm trying to format a thing or whatever. So that is one that I go take a look at once in a while. And I'm going to point out, we will have a link to Andrew's take on this in the show notes. It's going to be, like Andrew said, definitely go and check out the original article, get a cup of coffee, get a sandwich, whatever, and sit down with it. Cause it's a very interesting read, particularly, I enjoyed it as a person who lived through all of those transitions. And I think Andrew enjoyed it as a history lesson.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because it's written in a way that most everyone could understand as well. So it's good.
It's a really approachable article about some pretty technical stuff. So it's pretty nice to have. So with that, I'm going to talk to you about our sponsor today, and our sponsor today is Lightstream. And Lightstream wants to help you refinance your credit card balances and save on a credit card consolidation loan. This is awesome, particularly as for some people, this we are about to head into super bananas spending season. I think that's what it's called. So when you end up in debt, you know, because you've got all this stuff on your credit cards in January, Lightstream wants to help you out. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. And this is a lot lower than the average, which is over 20% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 up to $100,000 with no fees. There are zero application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, and there's not even a prepayment penalty. So if you end up ahead of schedule and want to just pay it off, there's no ding for that either. You can apply straight from your phone. You can even sometimes get your money the same day you applied. And just for my listeners, if you apply right now, you can get an additional interest rate discount. And the only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/TDO. It's lightstream.com/TDO. And you can get an additional discount on that already really low 5.95%. LIGHTSTREAM.com/TDO. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/TDO for more information. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, our other topic ties nicely into our first topic, because our first topic was Apple's technical transitions over time. And one of the ones that we've heard a lot about is the cable that you use to plug your phone in for power or sometimes for syncing. And apparently, we're hearing again, no, really, we mean it this time, you guys, that that cord might be going away.
The first thing I saw was an article at CNBC referencing the notorious Ming-Chao Kuo, the analyst at TF Securities, who says that, sorry, I got a frog in my throat this morning.
Oh, no.
Be right back.
Okay. So there was a CNBC article because apparently Ming-Chae Kuo has continued to discuss things that Apple is going to do. Is that about right, John?
Yeah, he says that in 2021, Apple's going to drop the Lightning port altogether, not replace it with USB-C, but drop the external port for charging and data altogether on the high-end phones. And they didn't explain why it was going to be just the high-end phones, but I have a feeling like that if his report is correct, that doing it on the high-end phones first, meaning more expensive phones, means that you're more likely to not raise a ruckus with the hardcore fans who see this as a natural Apple-esque transition, whereas people who are the mere heathens who use their phones for everyday use and don't spend as much money and are maybe not as informed as the hardcore fans would be shocked and alarmed to see the charging plug go, and confused to see the charging plug go away. And so maybe that'll stay around a little longer. And as this technology becomes more ingrained in us and refined and popularized, then in 2022, Apple can eliminate it on the low-end phones.
So I have a bunch of things to say about this, and I don't want to edit the show, so I'm going to try and edit myself. First of all, I think probably the gentlest way I can say this is shenanigans for a couple of reasons. When Apple sells you a phone, whatever the phone is, right? They're selling you a phone, and they are selling you a charging mechanism for that phone. So in the olden days, you got the little tiny plug with the one USB in it that you could just poke in the wall, and then you run your USB cord to it. And then you could also use that USB cord to plug it into your computer so you could sync it to iTunes. Because we didn't have anything over the air back in the day. When you needed to update your phone, you had to plug it into iTunes. And that was a 30-pin cable. And then now we have the Lightning cable, which I think most people can agree, now that everybody has been able to buy a few inexpensive Lightning cables and re-up their inventory of personal charging situations. Because, boy, I thought there were going to be torches and pitchforks in the streets when Apple decided to forsake 30-pin cables. Now that we have Lightning cables, which I do think is an improvement, you get the same thing. It's a little bigger charger for the iPad, and I think you get a USB-C one now with the iPhone. I myself use a wireless charger that I went and bought, so I don't have that one even out of the box. So what's interesting to me about this is that, first of all, I don't think that port is going to go away. Because how are you going to back up your phone? And second of all, I don't think they're going to do it to the pro people, you know, on the pro model, which is the one that's not going to get as many sales as like the regular ones. Because if you are a person who is utilizing that horsepower, if you're a person who actually is a pro user, if you are the guy who shot that snowball ad with your iPhone, you want to be able to back that up. You want to make sure that all that information is super secure, and you're not going to trust one thing to do it, whether that's Dropbox or iCloud or whatever. You're going to have a backup of your own, which you personally control. Like, a person who is making money using their phone to do things isn't going to just rely on iCloud and call it good. Like, that's foolishness. So that person's going to need to be able to plug it into iMazing, or now that we don't have to use iTunes anymore, if you did install Catalina, being able to have that local backup. I have access to all these files, even if there's no internet or anything else. I have a way to make sure that I can restore my phone again from zero if I have to, you know. And I feel like that's two really compelling reasons why Apple won't do this. The bonus reason is that, does this mean Apple's going to ship a wireless charger with every one of those phones? Really?
Hopefully.
Because I just find that so unlikely. Well, they'd have to. And I just don't think that's the thing Apple's going to do. Apple still won't even ship you. Apple's pack-in charger still only has a single USB port. One. That's all I'm saying. I immediately went out and bought the Anker one that's the same size as the little tiny iPhone charger, but it'll charge an iPad and it has two ports. And that's my go-to wall charger because it's small, but it still has two USB ports. So I know it's possible. Apple could put two in there if they really wanted to. And if Apple really thinks that everybody has more than one device at a time, one of the ways that you make sure that you can charge all your devices is by doing it easily. And that's the easiest way to do it. And Apple still won't do that. So
you're too logical, Kelly. You're too logical. I mean, Apple does these things and then the logical people rant and rave and the pros rant and rave. And then we deal with it and then we move on. And then years later we go, well, OK, we survived.
I'm stunned right now. Of all the things I've been called in my life, logical's never been one. I'm really glad I have that on tape. I don't see it. And maybe there's some compelling thing. Maybe it's going to be really easy to back up wirelessly.
What? I have to call you Amanda. Amanda to my Sarek.
Oh, I like that much better. I don't understand it. And I want to. And I want it to be great because I think wireless charging is amazing. Like I told you, I never even took the 11 Pro charger out of the box because I have wireless charging and I just set my phone there and it's amazing. And I don't even have to plug in the cable. I don't have to worry about dinging up the bottom of my phone or having a hard time because I got a case in the way or anything like that. You just set it there and it lights up and says it's charging and it's magical. And I love it. And I want everyone to have that. So I regularly recommend to people, if you have a phone that does this, you should just really get a wireless charger. And because I think it's so great, but Apple adding one to every phone, what's that going to be? Is that going to be a $1,500 phone because they have to put a wireless charger in every one of those boxes? Come on.
So I've actually speculated this in the past that maybe Apple would eventually remove the port. I'm just not sure it's going to be as soon as 2020 or 2021.
Yeah.
And two reasons that I came up for why they would do this was, mm-hmm. one, it would improve the waterproofing. No ports means less places for water to get into.
Absolutely.
But then it would also basically completely kill companies like Cellebrite, who use these special devices to plug into your phone and get all of the data off of that. And they won't be
probably
able to do that with
the...
That,
they can't do that with a lane port.
I think you just nailed it, Andrew.
That makes a compelling argument. That is at least a move I'd understand. I could see that maybe being a thing that happens. But I think more like from a practical standpoint, I don't see it being a thing anytime soon. My hope is the thing that I think, what's his name? He talks about Apple all the time, and it doesn't seem like he's right very much. Ming-Chi Kuo. The guy we're talking about. That was the joke, John.
Okay.
I think in 2017 or something, he said that they were going to go to USB-C. And I really thought the 11 was going to be that phone. I really, really did. Now that Johnny's gone and we don't have to make them thinner every year, I really thought it'll be the same thickness, but we figured out how to jimmy a USB-C port in the bottom. And it's got all the same advantages that Lightning had. It doesn't matter which way up you plug the cord in. The fast charging is going to be super awesome. Everybody's computers have USB-C on there because every Apple user bought a computer in the last two or three years. So everybody's got USB-C boards, all of that. So I really thought this was going to be the year where it was going to go USB-C on the phones. So I'm really surprised it didn't because we did the iPad last year. So I still think I hold out hope for that happening way sooner than I hold out hope for no ports whatsoever. Although those are compelling arguments, I still think we're going to get USB-C before we get no ports at all.
Well, another aspect of that is if no port is in the future, I think it would make sense just to skip USB-C and go from Lightning to no port because that's just one less transition that people have to deal with.
That's true.
I think you're right, Andrew. I like that idea.
Yeah. If it's something that they're ultimately gunning for, then yeah. But if it's something that they're gunning for in 10 years or something, even 5, I could see. It's possible. We'll have to see. And when we figure it out, we will talk to you all about it here on the Daily Observations podcast. I want to thank both of you for joining me for our slightly extended session today, because we just had so much stuff to talk about. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, as always, thank you for coming by.
You're very welcome. A very logical show.
I'm seriously going to play that back. That was really, I don't know if anyone's ever called me logical before, of all the things. No joke. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.